This is the Popmatic Podcast for December. We like to talk about micro machines.
Yeah.
Maybe Santa will bring me some.
Yeah. I'm Brian, and joining me today are...
Crystal.
And Amanda.
Mike.
And Bill.
Clint, do you want to announce yourself?
And Clint is here.
All right. That's a crazy...
From a distance.
Reluctantly.
From a distance.
That's a crazy
from a
beard,
distance.
Man.
That's pretty.
Clint's rocking a crazy beard, and where I'm from, that's called a buck beard. You can only shave it after you get your deer. I'll let all your city people figure that one out. Okay, so...
But mine will be gone by the time this is posted.
Ah.
I will have killed my buck by then.
All right.
First, last one, we talked about the deer hunter, so...
Yeah, that's right.
Now we are deer hunters.
So, December is holiday time, so if you're lucky, around the holidays, you probably spend time with family and loved ones. And so what we're going to do is talk about work that was created by family members or lovers together. For instance, like the Hernandez brothers, they make comics together. Get it? So I would talk about them. That's what we're going to do. Does that make sense?
Mm. Sure.
So far, so good.
What's
five
happening?
Five.
Hey, what's happening in December?
Christmas.
Hanukkah.
That, and that.
Actually, Hanukkah starts in Thanksgiving.
Oh, right. I forgot.
It's early this year.
Kwanzaa.
Michelle Norris at the library, Saturday, December 7th.
That's awesome. You know what? I was just going to make a joke about it being cold. Nothing's happening because it's cold. And then, like, you all come through totally unscripted. You have. That's cool. Yeah, we're awesome. So I'm going to kick off our families, lovers, holidays. We're all together having a good time, celebration, talking about super artistic power couple Matthew Barney and Bjork. Matthew Barney makes these film installations, like these like ongoing art projects that go over years where they're just like there'll be a film and there'll be sculptures and drawings and music that all goes with it. And don't feel bad about not seeing it because they're hard to see. I think there's only one museum in the world that actually has his entire Cray Master cycle, which has got him like all this international acclaim. Okay. So, okay, it's out there. You can read about him if you want, right? I'm not into art that you got to go to a gallery to see.
The nightmare.
Bjork, on the other hand, you've probably heard of. Icelandic singer, one of the most famous singers in the world. She has her own island.
Swan dress, you know, enthusiast.
She's achieved that level. And who designed that swan dress?
Was it a McQueen?
I thought it was.
I was going to say McQueen.
I think it was Lee McQueen. So anyway, they've only worked together on like one project, and that was Drawing Restraint number 9. And you can get that on Fregal. And it's very much Bjork in the mode of, say, Vespertine or Medulla sort of music box put through the MacBook situation style. The vocals are not as pop. There's not so much songs. They're more like avant-garde pieces. And Drawing Restraint number 9 was one of these really big, like, Matt Barney theater installations of film. It had all these parts. But you can just get the soundtrack with Bjork and other artists. I mean, it's all about Japan, tea ceremonies and wailing. And, you know, I've never seen it, but you can get the music from that Drawing Restraint number 9 by Bjork. It's funny, too, because the thing about Bjork is, like, you know, those pipes that she used to have, they're kind of starting to go. She's getting older. I'm interested in what she does with her career. And totally, totally off topic, but Charlotte Church.
Charlotte Church?
I'm into anyone who's...
This
is totally left field, but I'm just going to put this in there, you know, like a power trip. I'm into anyone who's Welsh anyway. But so Charlotte Church just did this lecture on BBC about... like sexual images of women in music, and I think it was probably a response to this whole like Miley Cyrus thing. And Charlotte Church, you know, has been in the spotlight like from the time she was like 11. So she's been through like all this sort of media crap of like, you know, becoming an adult and being sexualized, whether she wants to or not. Just some really interesting things to say. Some of the stuff is pretty cool. Some of the stuff, But in there, her two female artists who's like really admirable were like, well, I would say like Bjork and Grimes. So take an artist who's sort of at mature stage in her career and an artist that's at the beginning stage of her career, like Grimes. So Bjork is really awesome, and Grimes too. And I like Bjork and Grimes, and I've talked about Bjork and Grimes on the podcast, so hooray for me. And maybe I'll link to that interview if I can get to it, because it was sort of fun. So, Crystal, what you got? Hey, I made a mistake.
One.
I've never done that before. Amanda, what you got?
Well, my couple is not so much a profound meeting of the minds with their artistic collaboration. It's really kind of a more, hey, wouldn't it be funny if... So, of course, Melissa McCarthy right now is kind of the it girl in comedy land. She stars on the sitcom Mike and Molly as Molly, and she's also been in a ton of movies. Her latest three, her husband had joined her for a cameo appearance. So if you think about Bridesmaids, if you've seen it, and the part where she gets on the plane and she's sitting there, the gentleman next to her, Air Marshal John, that she's trying to convince him that he's an air marshal and he disagrees even though he really is, that's her husband. That's Ben Falcone. They met when they were in the Groundlings comedy troupe together, and they've been together forever. They've got two little girls. And so he's got comedic chops just as much as she does. That's where they're at in Bridesmaids. Then if you watch Identity Thief with Jason Bateman, towards the end of the movie, they check into this hotel and they're trying to get a room, and the clerk at the desk that makes it challenging for them, which, you know, he's her husband. Why wouldn't he make it challenging for her to get a room with another man? So he's standing there and he's throwing cards at him. And so, again, Ben Falcone. And then I just watched The Heat the other night with McCarthy and Sandra Bullock as cops. And random points throughout the movie, these one-night stands come up to Melissa McCarthy and, like, you know, want to get back together because they had such a great night and blah, blah, blah. So at one point, Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy are drinking in a bar together, and her husband walks by and, hey, how have you been? You know, it was really great, and we should get together and do something. And so she's trying to, like, you know, let him down gently, but, like, still let him down. And then all of a sudden they start making out, and then she, like, pushes him off and, like, walks away. And so that's his cameo. So I just think it's hilarious that it's not something you would necessarily know. Like, I didn't know the first time I watched Bridesmaids that they were married. But it, now that you know, you have to go back and watch it again, because it kind of makes it funnier when you think that she's sitting there working with, you know, off her husband like that, and their timing is really funny. So, Melissa McCarthy, Ben Falcone. Oh, and CBS just picked up a pilot that's going to be, I think it's going to star him, and I don't know if she's got a role in it or she's going to be the producer on it, but so far it's unnamed, so it'll be interesting to see as we get into the new television season if that actually goes all the way to fruition or if it goes the way of Air Marshal John. So,
when Bill gets to the folks that he's going to talk about, I mean, it'll be interesting.
Compare and contrast.
Yeah, compare and contrast. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, now, Crystal, what would you like to say?
So I'm going to talk about reggae pop duo Wild Bill. It consists of an older brother, Elliot, and younger sister, Natalie. And I don't know their exact ages, but I do know there's an 8-year difference between them. Elliot studied saxophone at the University of Michigan, and while there, he played with an Afrobeat dance band called Nomo, and Natalie studied piano and voice at Berklee College of Music in Boston. But now bear with me for a minute as I visit another branch of this family tree through a fascinating piece of information I discovered during my research. Natalie and Elliot's mother was Susan Bergman. She was a teacher, musician, a painter, and author. Now, Susan died in 2006 from brain cancer, but she wrote a book called Anonymity. It was published in 1994. It was about her father, and this is Elliot and Natalie's grandfather, and his secret life as a gay man and early victim of the AIDS epidemic. Now, Susan Bergman had sisters, one of which is actress Anne Heche. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes her Natalie and Elliot's aunt. But back to Wild Bill. Their debut album, Isles, which dropped earlier this year, it features one of their late mom's paintings as the album cover artwork. So how did this brother and sister begin to play music together, and more importantly, how do they actually get along while collaborating?
Good question.
Yeah.
Elliot invited Natalie to join Nomo when they were on the road. She played percussion and sang backup. And then later they decided to form their own band. They were recently interviewed on the Sound Opinions podcast. And the siblings said that the collaboration works so well because they share so many musical tastes. And Natalie later said in that same interview, and I quote here, "If I no longer had my eyes or my ears, he, Elliot, would know what to do for me because we share the same vision." Natalie's vocals remind me a lot of Erykah Badu. Let's see what you think. Let's check out a clip from the opening track on Isles. It's called Keep You. Now, you also heard Brother Elliot there. He's still working his saxophone skills. So the more you listen to this album, the more you'll begin to appreciate the layers to these songs. It sounds loose and laid back, how I imagine life hanging out on a beach could be. But it
must be nice.
That's right. But it's tight. I mean, there are no notes or beats that are haphazardly dropped here. Here's another example. Let's check out a clip from a track called Love Like This. We could live in paradise and never have to leave. Well, is it true? Whenever I look around, I can always find you by my side in the morning and night. You're my king and you all the time. Natalie and Elliot have two other siblings, a sister who is a fashion designer, she helped on the artwork, and a brother who filmed one of their music videos. To me, they're a great example of a happy, nurturing family, bonding together in a totally functional way.
You just did air quotes. Functional. Yeah.
So brighten these dark winter days with this joyful album by Wild Bill. It's available for download on Freegal. All right, Mike, what you got?
Oh, boy. Well, I have a series of books written by a mother-son writing team, which is just crazy. It's called the Inspector Ian Rutledge Mysteries, and it's set after World War I. Basically, he's a police detective who works for Scotland Yard, who basically specializes in investigating things outside of London. You know, he's kind of like the, you know, the equivalent of like the FBI, you know, like there's a murder that's so heinous or whatever that they have to call in the equivalent of the feds. But he's harboring a secret that he experienced what they called shell shock back then, but they call it PTSD now. And he sees a ghost of somebody who continuously tried to hinder his investigations and his life, called Hamish, who was a guy that he ordered to be executed during the war. And then shortly afterwards, like a shell fell in the trench and then he woke up and he sees the guy's ghost all the time.
Yikes.
It's it's kind of vague too as to whether like Hamish is an actual ghost, because sometimes he says stuff that you really wouldn't think that the other guy would know, or he'd be like, look out or something. You know, it's like, what?
Pretty helpful ghost.
But then, you know, yeah, he,
like
I think
Casper.
He,
yeah.
Casper, the crazy Scottish.
Or like the Beltar angel in Battlestar Galactica. Changes, you know. At first it seems like he's an hallucination, then he sort of becomes an angel by the end.
Spoilers!
Wow. I need to get back to that show.
You haven't watched that show? Come on.
I think I left off at episode 3.
You're lost!
Well, I've been meaning to get back to it. Anyway, Let's see, where was it?
Go back to Inspector Rutledge.
So, I mean, I like it a lot. It's just, it's kind of bleak. His boss basically, like, sends him out on these investigation thingies because he doesn't really like him. And he saw, like, his mental collapse after the war, so he doesn't trust him. And so he's trying to get him to, like, work too much to get him overextended so he can, like, crack and then he can fire him. You know, the ghost isn't very nice. And then the people that he bumps into are always like, why are you here? You know, we don't need your help. And so it's kind of depressing. So I wouldn't, like, binge read them if I were you, which I did.
I would.
That's Brian's holiday plan right now.
That's right.
Just made it right there.
Yeah, I used to, like, read stuff that was depressing around Christmas time because I got tired of all the holiday cheer. But usually it was, like, post-apocalyptic novels and stuff. I also thought I'd briefly, like, the author's note in the actual books just sounds like a typical author's note. It's like, Charles Todd, in, you know, lives in America and enjoys writing. But then in the actual, like, website, it's like, you know, there's a picture of, you know, mom and son. And it's like, it amused me that the author note on the website has, like, this weird, like, dichotomy about it. Like, Charles and Caroline have a rich storytelling heritage. Both spent many evenings on the porch listening to their fathers and grandfathers reminisce. Which is weird because they both have the same. And, and let's see, there's writing together is a challenge and both enjoy giving each other a hard time. The famous quote is that in revenge, Charles crashes Caroline's computer and Caroline crashes his parties. Will they survive to write more novels together? Their father slash husband is holding bets.
Ah, that's so weird.
That's so weird.
Well, anyway. I was thinking, don't you think it's weird that there's a mother-son novel writing team?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That's just, you know. And then I was just thinking, like, the only stuff that my mom and I have in common is a love of action movies and foreign films. So I'm picturing, like, The Raid Redemption 2 or something. That would be pretty cool. Some type of, like, kung fu, something with explosions and gun battles.
So some other, like, authors that have worked together, like Anne and Todd McCaffrey. I think Todd McCaffrey is Anne's son. And then Dick Francis and Felix Francis, and now Felix Francis just writes the books. And the same thing with W.E.B. Griffin, and I can't remember. I think his son is – well, I remember, can't remember his son's name. But now I think his son writes those books. And then even William Johnstone, the guy that writes the Mountain Man trilogy, like, they're still called William Johnstone, but that's, like, a trademark name now, like V.C. Andrews. But and his son is the person who supposedly, like, writes the novels and is in control of the estate, so – it's a common thing, but I don't know if people that are alive. It almost – doesn't it make more sense that a father and son would get together and write, like, war novels?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hey, whatever.
They read another series about – I think it's a nurse named Bess or something, but it's also set after World War One. But I didn't read that one, so I can't really recommend it. And anyway.
I don't read any of the stuff I talk about.
That's the challenge.
I just pick them up.
He just reads Wikipedia and goes from there.
Yeah, exactly.
I just recall hearing last time that you don't like reading or something. Books? I don't have books or something.
Actually, considering that the literacy rate in Tennessee is so low, I should not joke about that. I love books. That's why I do this. And I read sometimes. I'm sorry, Bill. So what you got?
Well, the couple I want to talk about is Frank and Eleanor Perry. In 1962, their first collaboration was released called David and Lisa, with a script by Eleanor Perry based on a book by Theodore Isaac Rubin and directed by Frank Perry. The Perrys started out in the theater, and at the time when they started out, they were not happy with the types of plays being produced. However, in the local art house cinema, they fell under the influence of the French New Wave, with films like The 400 Blows and Hiroshima Mon Amour. They decided to make their own movie, and they fell in love with a story about a young man and a young woman who fall in love and help each other while they're in a mental institution. In 1962, David and Lisa was released and became a critical and sleeper box office success of the year. In a way, Frank and Eleanor Perry are the parents of the independent film movement in America. At the time, it wasn't called independent film. It was called alternative filmmaking. We have David and Lisa in our collection, but sadly, none of the other movies in which the Perrys collaborated on. However, I did go on YouTube, and I did find Ladybug, Ladybug, their Cold War drama, a scratchy VHS print of Diary of a Mad Housewife, The Swimmer, which is on something called Crackle. You have to pay to look at it, but it's worth the time. and their adaptation of Truman Capote's A Christmas Memory, which used to get requested all the time at the library. Now it's on, the entire production is on YouTube. Sadly, the Perry's union did not last. They divorced in the early 70s. Oh, they also made another film that you can't find anywhere called Last Summer, which I'm a big fan of. But back to what I was saying, the Perry's union did not last, but their movies still do.
All right. So, do any Hollywood couples last?
Yeah, seriously.
Let's see.
Some do.
Some do. I know. All I know is if I had to make an album with my sister, one of us would end up dead. There would be like...
I would just lock my brother in the closet and go about my business.
Yes. You know, it's funny. It's like, I don't think that we have any of their work anymore, but one of my favorite bands in the world is the band The Knife, and they're brother and sister, too. So I got to put that in there. I wanted to put that in there. But like back to like married power couples, kind of wanted to close out with Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson, especially because Lou Reed just died, you know, last month. And we only get to do this once a month, so our response is always kind of delayed. So Lou Reed, of course, founded the Velvet Underground, which was, you know, the beginning of all alternative music in the world. And Laurie Anderson was like one of these Matthew Barney types who does these huge multimedia art projects, but then sometimes sort of filters down into nice little things like compact discs or albums or, you know, films. And, you know, they're like the king and queen of New York, you know, like the ultimate like art power couple. And a lot of people love Lou Reed, you know, for his rock and roll music. And, you know, after the Velvet Underground or even like the last two Velvet Underground albums and all his solo work, what you can really see about his work is he really cared about songwriting. He's like one of the masters of songcraft. That's, you know, it's not a lot of words in his songs, but, you know, the poetry is there. And he also just really obsessed about the way his guitars sounded, you know, like on all his records, even though the songs are really simple, you know, he felt that he knew exactly the way that he wanted them to sound. He was obsessed with the production quality and the mastering and everything. And it's funny, too, the person that it actually reminds me of is actually Keith Richards, because, you know, this persona of Keith Richards is crazy wild man. But if you ever hear him talk about his guitar playing, or if you think about the Rolling Stones sound or their songs, they're not that complicated, but the dude is like obsessed with the little tiny wee things like the tone of his guitar and everything. And you wonder like, well, no wonder these songs are hits or these albums sound so good. And the same thing with Lou Reed. If you go back to, you know, and listen to the solo records, he was obsessed the same way. And I don't care about any of that. He did put out a record in 1975 though, called Metal Machine Music, which is undeniably the beginning of the noise genre, as it's called now, which is just walls of pummeling static. Just and the whole thing is on Freegal, and there's only four long tracks. You can get the whole album in one week.
Hey.
Yeah, Metal Machine Music, and man, you're going to be disappointed because that's just like 60 minutes of horrible, piercing static. But everyone at the time felt like, oh, there's still this debater on the record, and I love this, is whether, was he serious or not? And actually, I think he was serious. Like, Lou Reed was a provocateur, like most noise artists. He liked to challenge people. Some writers have said what he's trying to portray here is actually what it feels like when you're on speed, because at the time in the 70s, Lou Reed was taking a lot of speed. So if you want to know what it's like on speed and grinding your teeth, Metal Machine Music. See how long you can take it. And, you know, one of the other we're talking about power couples. One of the other kind of things that boiled up to the surface when I was reading all these obituaries about Lou Reed was one of the last things that he published was actually a review of Kanye West's Yeezus album at this website that did, like, celebrity, like, reviews of other works. So the last thing that Lou Reed wrote was this longish review of Kanye West Yeezus, and it was like talking about how it's industrial. And if podcast listeners know that I just read that book about industrial music, and I was like, Kanye West at some point became a parody of himself when I stopped paying attention, right? But I was like, well, I'll go back. So sure enough, I bring home this Yeezus record from the library, and I turn it up, and I was like, wow, right? It's funny because what he's doing in this production, it's just like an industrial record. And it's like, so what's interesting thing about, you know, that Reed book, The History of Industrial, was, you know, it's not even a genre that even exists anymore, but all the production techniques and the style and all the sounds have just gone into popular music. And it's funny that one of the most famous rappers in the world basically makes this record that could be Nine Inch Nails if the vocals were different. That's fun. So thank you, Lou Reed, for making me listen to Kanye West again, even though that record isn't so good. It's just fun to hear the first time, you know? I think that's all I got. What? What's so funny? Crystal's laughing. What?
I'm just joyful.
Why? Lou Reed is finally dead.
Oh, man.
And so the celebrity couple, of course, Kanye West is married to Kim Kardashian,
Engaged.
They're not married yet?
No.
That's weird. And what does Kim Kardashian do?
Yeah, one's a celebrity and one is a hanger-on who makes reality shows.
Oh, okay.
She's famous for being famous.
Yeah.
I'm famous for not being famous? That's the way.
I'm infamous for being famous.
You must go on Hulu or SNL's website and see the sketch, the recent sketch from the November 16th episode where Jay Farrow and Nassim Pedrad portray Yeezus and Kim in a talk show.
I second that. That is hilarious. And they also, Lady Gaga's in that skit too.
And of course she would.
She plays Karen, the Apple Store worker.
And she totally makes fun of herself too. Yeah. So like, it's funny. It was something which Kanye West can't do. Or Lou Reed couldn't do, right? Could never handle any criticism at all. And, I feel bad. I told Amanda I was going to make you talk about Laurie Anderson. So, do you just say anything about Laurie Anderson? Because I think you talked about her once on the podcast before.
I think I mentioned her. I like Laurie Anderson. She was kind of really one of the first female artists. She was very much a global artist. Like, she didn't just do music. She actually got her start in art. And then she kind of was into that happening scene where she would have, like, an art as an experience. And probably her most famous piece would be called Oh Superman. And she was one of the first female artists to use a vocoder. And I tried to find facts. I can't substantiate this, but when I was in music school, they were telling us that she actually figured out a way to, like, actually implant it, like, in her mouth, like, towards her vocal cords, so that it wasn't just a box they were in. So it was actually, like, part of her speech production process. And if you can YouTube Oh Superman, it's on there. You can listen. It's like 7 minutes, and I have yet to make it all the way through all 7 minutes. But I definitely think that if you listen to Laurie Anderson, and you can see how she laid the groundwork for artists like Imogen Heap, who then have used that not just to, like, you know, tune your voice to actually an expression of, you know, artistic expression. Like, I was thinking of Imogen Heap's Hide and Seek song that she did that was so popular a couple years ago. It's very reminiscent of Laurie Anderson, and I had no idea that she and Lou Reed were even together. Like, I thought she just lived in her hovel somewhere and made crazy electronic music. And
they
were together for a while.
Yeah, they got married in 1992, and I think she was there with him when he died. So famous musicians can live together and love each other, but I think you get a film camera involved, it just causes problems. I don't know why.
My couple's still together. They've been together. They got married, I think, they were together a long time. I got married together in 98, I think, and then they got married in 2005. So far, so good.
Fingers crossed.
She
Audio podcast.
He's making silly, crazy movies that he gets cameos in, and they'll be fine.
Amanda.
Yes. Yes, Brian.
What is tickling your fancy this month?
For some reason, I've been reading a ton of nonfiction, and the one that I just finished that was really enjoyable was called The Astronaut Wives Club. It was about the wives of astronauts and the club they formed.
No way!
I know, right?
I thought it was a metaphor for, like, aliens.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, yeah. Sorry, I should have warned you. But it starts with the initial seven astronauts, which includes, of course, John Glenn, Gus Grissom, and some other people, I can't remember their names.
Alan Shepard,
oh sure. And, like, so it talks about all the hijinks they get up to and all the stuff the wives had to put up with. And then it adds the next Gemini round and then the Apollo crew and, you know, tells what happens when bad things happen, what happens to the wives and how the families deal with that. It was very interesting. It was kind of sad. Not necessarily spoiler alert, but a lot of the couples that were, you know, the perfect astronaut American family actually got divorced after the whole program kind of stopped, and they just couldn't handle the pressure of being apart that long because the wives were in Houston and the guys were working in Cape Canaveral. And also just the stress of being on camera all the time with all the news people there and Life magazine and everything, that just when it stopped, it really stopped. So interesting viewpoint, not something that I would have thought from our history books. Definitely don't talk about
you know, the wives' perspective. But so that was The Astronaut Wives Club by Lily Koppel. So, Mike, what's scaring you?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. That's right. Some leftover Shocktober mess. All right. I have a book called Yokai Attack, The Japanese Monster Survival Guide. It is awesome. Written by Hiroko Yoda and Matt Alt. You guys get to laugh at my terrible Japanese pronunciations. I thought I was pretty good at it, and then I flipped through this book. It's like, oh, no, I'm terrible. So basically, like, I've always been interested in, like, myths and folklore and, you know, folk tales and that kind of thing. And but I've, you know, up to a point, I guess, because I apparently know nothing about Eastern mythology. So occasionally we get books downstairs, like there's like a yokai manga that's name escapes me. And I didn't bother to look up what that meant because, you know, whatever, manga. And then we got a book called this.
Our professionalism is legendary.
That's right. And then we got a book called Yokai Attack. And I flipped through it and I was like, ooh, this is pretty cool. It's basically yokai are like supernatural creatures, but not really like demons or anything. But basically it's kind of like monster. Yeah. And I thought it was kind of neat that a lot of them reflect different bits of Japanese society more than, you know, there's reasons why we haven't heard of most of these things because a lot of them are kind of silly. Although some of them are creepy and awesome. I thought the art was really good. It's a combination of like modern Japanese kind of manga style. And then they'll show like a print, like a 200-year-old print of the same thing. You can like compare and contrast. And I thought I would like mention a few of them with terrible pronunciations and then you can, you know, judge them for what you will. How about an Akaname? Ooh. This one I love because it's like one of those things that would never exist in the West. Basically, it's like a feral looking person with a really long tongue whose goal in life is to eat the mildew in your bathroom. I was like, can I hire one?
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, that's the coolest thing ever. Apparently, it's supposed to be, oh, you know, I feel really bad and ashamed that I can't clean my bathroom, so this horrible monster is going to eat it for me. Boo-hoo. I'm all like, hey,
right.
Yeah, there's like, and then I kept reading, like, seeing that there's like a downside, like it eats babies or like, you know. I was like, nope, nothing. It's like, I want an Akaname.
Do they come in colors?
They come in bright red, apparently.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Let's see. We got a, I like this one, an Ashi Arai Yashiki, which is basically a giant Monty Python-esque foot that crashes through your roof, and the only way to get rid of it is to scrub it clean.
Can we use the other monster to scrub clean the foot?
I know, right? Maybe if it, like, walked in some grout or something.
There you go.
And a Nue, which is a cross between a monkey, a tiger, a snake, and a tanuki, which I cannot mention what a tanuki is in this family-friendly podcast. Let's see, which is a Nue is a harbinger of bad luck and illness. Ooh, yeah. Like, it like hangs out in clouds and stuff. And supposedly they got this, like, a tale for, in the year 1153, a black cloud appeared near the imperial palace, and soon the emperor fell deathly ill. No one knew what to do. Everybody was frantic. But one lone guard, who I guess he had a hunch or he grew up in the country or something, whatever, like he shot a single black arrow into the same cloud, and a Nue dropped to the ground dead. And the emperor was surely fine.
Country with them.
That's right. See,
so he goes to shave his beard. He got his book.
Yeah. See, strange monkey thing. Lastly, oh, hey.
That's a strange monkey thing beard.
We've come full circle, though.
It's quite a beard. Lastly, a Dorotabo. The only like the scariest thing in the book to me is like this legless is like a legless man made of mud with like one big red eye that grabs people in rice paddies. But the goofy thing is that they seem to postulate that the name and the creature come from slang for going to a brothel in northern Edo in pre-20th century Japan. So it's like, I don't know exactly. I forgot the exact sentence. It was really long, and I can't pronounce it. I was like, huh. And lastly, I thought I'd just briefly mention, I like did no research on this, but normal people who've heard of the radio and award shows and stuff may have heard of a band called The Civil Wars. I was like, oh.
I know them.
Mentioned them on the podcast.
Oh, well, yeah. I missed that episode because today I've listened to nothing but Barton Hollow, which I'd never heard of until today. And I was like, this song's amazing. I should tell everybody about this. Wow, even though they probably already know because they're like, normal people who listen to the radio.
Hottest band in Nashville for the past like year and a half, yeah.
Until they broke up.
I think that's the in-between zones, right?
I hope not, because I want to go home and buy like everything they've ever made, which is only two CDs.
It's on Freegal.
Ooh, Freegal. Uh-huh, well, nice. I shall download it with the magic of Freegal.
Yeah, they have two albums.
Yeah, yeah.
The next one is called The Civil Wars.
Yeah. Well, okay then. I'll look that up afterward. Why? Take it away, Bill.
Okay, tickling my fancy is Charles Manson and Jim Henson, and let me explain. There are two very interesting biographies out now on these two individuals. The first book is Manson, The Life and Times of Charles Manson by Jeff Gwynn. The second book is just simply titled Jim Henson by Brian J. Jones. Of course, Charles Manson is the infamous mass murderer and follower of the Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. And Jim Henson is the creator of the Muffets. I just listened to these two books on audio CD, and I highly recommend them if you're going on a long trip this holiday season. Both books are highly engrossing, and I wish that I had them when I was going on a trip, but they've made the journey going to work and back thoroughly enjoyable. They're well-researched and totally engrossing. So all I'm simply going to say is, for one last time, tickling the old fancy is Manson, The Life and Times of Charles Manson by Jeff Gwynn, and Jim Henson by Brian J. Jones. Great books on CD. Highly recommend them.
I am kind of disappointed, though, that it's not one book.
Yeah,
I thought it was like, you know, the Forbidden Puppet that they wouldn't allow on PBS.
Well, it's just I saw these two biographies come in, and I thoroughly enjoyed them.
You know, Bill, I was going to recommend to you Nobody Move by Dennis Johnson, read by Will Patton, one of my favorite book readers. This is a really short, great, awesome crime novel read by an awesome reader. I could recommend it to everybody, but I've got to recommend it to you in particular.
Okay.
Check that out. It's good stuff.
All right.
Tickling my fancy this week is The Lost Art of Apuk Is Here by Malcolm McNeil. I've actually had it out on an interlibrary loan for so long that I've got...
I think he got an overdue notice today, if I'm not mistaken.
I got the return it now or be put in prison notice.
We're very harsh.
I had to wait to the podcast record day, right? So Apuk Is Here is a book by William S. Burroughs. And in the 70s, him and Malcolm McNeil were going to make basically... a Mayan codex out of this text with Malcolm McNeil doing the art and Burroughs doing the words. And they wanted it to be this really like high art production with really good production values. They're really specific that they didn't want it to be a comic. They wanted it to be like some kind of, graphic novel that wasn't a comic book or an illustration or a book text with illustration, some kind of new thing. Of course, no one wanted to publish this.
Shocking.
There were people that showed interest but never really came through. So eventually, in 78, Burroughs just publishes the text for Apuk Is Here. For years, Malcolm's work just kind of sat in storage. And then finally later, people were like, you have to show this. This is an amazing thing. You really have to put this out. So he gets his own gallery show. Fantagraphics agrees to publish two hardback editions. One, a memoir of his time with Burroughs and the saga of creating this thing, because they were very ambitious and they were trying to create something new. And then another hardback edition with just the art. So The Lost Art of Apuk Is Here is just the art, and it is amazing. And, being a Burroughs fanatic, and there's so much stuff published about Burroughs every year, who cares? This is the most interesting thing to come along in a long time. And the art is amazingly cool and not for kids. I had to interlibrary loan it, but it was worth it. It's a good time. That's all I got. Crystal.
All right.
Tickling Your Fancy.
Tickling My Fancy this episode is a 10-minute music video. And here's a scoop. David Bowie released his latest album the next day earlier this year. James Murphy, formerly of LCD Sound System, has remixed the song Love Is Lost, calling it the Hello Steve Reich mix.
Cool.
So Bowie himself created a music video for a 4-minute cut of this mix using his home equipment and a kind of creepy lifelike David Bowie puppet, and reportedly for less than $20.
Everyone needs to have one of those.
I know.
Me too.
But a director named Barnaby Roper, who has worked with musicians like Kanye West, the aforementioned...
Jesus.
He is a god, right?
Our Lord Jesus.
So Barnaby Roper created this crazy, mind-bending film for the complete version of Murphy's mix. It is so cool. Watch it.
I would just like to add to Steve Reich, the Hello Steve Reichness. Steve Reich was a minimalist composer in the 70s, kind of in the same genre as Laurie Anderson, except he was more of a composer, not so much as an experimental artist, but Now I'm intrigued.
Nice way to tie it together.
Yeah.
If you want more information, go to www.library.nashville.org.
Yeah, I knew that.
The tree monster.
Or what else can you do, Bill?
Well, Google it or Bing it.
Wait, we're popular enough that we'll be the first hit if you Google Nashville Public Library?
If we do it enough, we will be.
All right, let's all just do that. Just Google it over and over again.
To ask Jeeves.
I was like, oh, yeah, okay, well, I'll pass that along. I did not say that to her.